You are listening to Attention, the audio journal for architecture. This is issue number 8, talking about my generation. Interviews were conducted by Joseph Bedford between 2021 and 2022. I'm Tim Cox, the guest editor and narrator for the issue. This is episode number 2, Generations. In common usage, the word generations calls to mind pop culture generations, boomers from 1946 to 1964, Gen Xers from 1965 to 1980, and millennials from 81 to 95. But do these groupings work when applied to architecture? Yes and no, because Michael Meredith was born in 1971, and Brittany Utting and Daniel Jacobs were both born in 1988. They grew up listening to different music, watching different things on TV, and using different kinds of technology from a young age. Yet within architecture, they can be seen as part of a similar generation because they share a similar response to changes taking place in the discipline, namely those changes surrounding the influence of the discourse of post-criticality, their moves away from seeing digital tools as novel and distinctive, and their embrace of aesthetic tropes like informal modes of composition and pastel color palettes. When asked to speak about their generation, a common first reaction for many in the group was to reject the relevance of the concept. Before they saw generationality as addressing aspects of their historical experience within architecture, many saw the concept as pointing too uncomfortably towards their shared institutional or educational grouping. They thought of generations as a category imposed from the outside, or as a comforting fantasy, a tool of art historical narratives, or as simplifying and reductive with respect to the complexity of each individual's experience. Their initial reaction to the concept of generations was part of their larger desire to not be viewed as part of a group or a movement with a historical project. They also saw the discourse around generations as tired and tainted by the tropes of family feuds and Oedipal complexes, of father killing and rejecting the past. We will hear in our first sequence the following voices in this order: Curtis Roth, David Eskenazi, Naran Turan, Anna Niemark, and Hans Tersak.
I wonder about the idea of generationality in general and whether or not people of my age, of my generation, or people generally sort of see work generationally in those terms. And I guess I'm not sure that I necessarily do.
I'm always a little bit uncomfortable with the generation thing. It always feels a little bit like it works in sort of the sense of maybe personal histories of how we make our careers and our thoughts, but it always seemed like a model that felt back like an art historic model to some extent. Like there was this, and then there was this, and there was this. And I remember when I was in school, that was one of the first things we were told was some lineage that went from like Eisenman to Graglin to whatever Sayard was when I was a graduate student in that moment. And I always thought it was super ridiculous because it didn't really speak to ideas. It spoke to kill your father, but don't completely kill your father.
I have an uneasy relationship with the idea of generation. On the one hand, I love it because it brings a sense of belonging, and I feel that I'm not alone. And, you know, we're a collective and we have shared anxieties, our fascinations, etc. But at the same time, I know that that's also not true.
I haven't really found a way to think or work in a kind of generational modality either, despite the fact that we've participated in many exhibitions and books and group projects. All of these categories have been artificially imposed, I think, a bit. Retrospectively, I think we can probably feel differently, but I always find that we just work on our own work, you know, and we do the work that we can do in the time that we have here, and we can be honest about it.
I don't want to make sweeping generalizations about architects who are roughly my age, if we're talking generationally, because that can be reductive, or it can slip into like conversations around pedigree and affiliation and friendships and cliques and stuff like that. So it's a little bit of a difficult question because I might err on one side or the other, both of which I think are erroneous, you know, or tricky political positions. So I'll try to do my best, you know, without just talking about me and my friends who have been through this circuit of fellowships, which are highly problematic in terms of their selection processes and sort of who's in and who's out and all of that stuff. At the same time, there is a group of us who have been in academia for a few years now, keep an eye on each other's work, are sometimes personal friends. So one can make some generalizations about that very select, albeit very elitist and sometimes problematically exclusive group.
A generation is always defined, or at least traditionally has been defined, as one that tries to, you know, somehow critique or rebel against the previous one. So like the definition of the breaking point between one and another has to do with some sort of counterattack or some sort of disagreement. Somehow, perhaps our group agrees more than disagrees, even though there might be factions, I'm not sure. But agrees to just be productive, honestly. We're not the 1960s genre of trying to kill your father. I think we continue to look up to one another and support each other.
As we can hear from these responses, the word generation did not just solicit people to think about their shared formative historical experiences. It also elicited various kinds of concerns. Concerns about the idea of being a protege of a particular figure, of being friends with people who you went to school with, of being part of a movement that someone might write about, or as being part of a debate about different ways of approaching architecture. As we heard from Anna Niemark's last comment, this generation describes itself as friendly and supportive. In contrast to the ideological polarization of prior generations, they want to see everyone eat at the table, as Eric Herman put it, a position which is in conflict with the exclusionary dynamics of group formation and lineages of privileged institutions that are typically associated with architectural discourse around generations. However, perhaps this cohort's uneasiness with being grouped together as a generation corresponds more to their lack of a shared aesthetic project. Prior cohorts of academic architects could be identified with distinct formal and representational tendencies, from parametricism to deconstruction or postmodernism. In contrast, this group emphasized their differences and understood their work as individuals. When they did characterize the group as a whole, they used words like plural, various, messy, loosely gathered, mixed, multiple, or multifaceted, and rejected descriptors like singular or monolithic. Here's Hans Tersak, Anna Niemark, Daniel Jacobs, Kyle Schumann, and Meredith Miller.
I think one of the things that distinguishes us is hyperpluralism, even within our very, very niche, tiny thing that most of the world of architecture does not care about, you know, which is experimental academic architecture. There's so much variety of projects.
There isn't any one set of concerns. And that has to do both with the aesthetic or formal interests, but also with the political and social. And I think that is not only within architecture, it's really just a global affair.
It is difficult to parse those lines with precision. It's funny. It's a latent thing that we're always thinking about who do we align with, but it's always difficult because everybody's a messy mixture in a way.
that we
can't. I'm curious if people are willing to put themselves in camps.
I would have a little bit more trouble now saying that there's one debate maybe being had amongst what we're calling like the younger, quote, younger generation, because I think there's multiple facets to what's being done now.
I think where I would start is to question whether there is a monolithic tendency or a single umbrella that all of those practices would fall under. And maybe I'm not seeing what you're seeing in it, but I tend to think that there's a range of, you know, interests and aesthetic sensibilities and motivations and objectives that those designers are all pursuing. And while I definitely see overlaps in many of the practices, I don't feel that it's monolithic. And I tend to see that the moments of gathering or kind of collecting underneath the exhibitions or publications that you mentioned, I feel like it's pretty loose, and maybe that's the point for some of those editors or curators is to kind of pull together a loose collection of practices that have the same amount of experience or, you know, around the same moment in their career, and just to kind of look at where there might be overlaps, where there might be differences, but not try to label a single tendency that they would all fall under.
We can begin to hear a key theme of this issue of attention: the conflict between pluralism as an ideology that is inclusive, permissive, and encouraging of diversity, and the alignment of pluralism with neoliberal individualism and the entrepreneurial self. For example, we might wonder whether being more of an individual and being less concerned with groups and lineages, what we could call one's social context, is precisely something that is a feature of the historical experience of those born in the 1980s, when the idea of society was being rolled back and individual striving was emphasized. Andrew Kovacs suggested that he saw everyone in this group as being focused on the individual, and that while they saw a need to be part of a shared discourse, creating such a discourse was always secondary to doing their individual work.
Everyone wants to be an individual. I think this is all not necessarily talked about in a very open way, but everyone wants to be an individual while also making their own art of architecture. It's almost like we're all just doing art projects in the context of architecture, right? And then I think in order to validate this or to justify the point of this work, there needs to be some kind of shared discussion, because otherwise you just have a bunch of individuals making their own art projects. There are shared interests, overlaps, groupings, you know, things that multiple people might be interested in. But really what I think it is that each one of these characters in your so-called scene, they're all trying to make an individual project. And in order to have it be seen as relevant or valid, there has to be this construction of a discourse around it.
Even in the way that people spoke about the range of topics we'll cover in this issue of attention, there was a near universal tendency to insist that each person was only speaking for themselves. There was a sense that articulating a generational tendency or making claims about this group's work as a whole was impolite and inappropriate.
I can only speak for myself here.
I don't want to speak for the rest of the group.
Speaking for myself.
Maybe I'll speak for myself.
It might be only fair that I answer for myself.
Speaking for myself.
I'll speak for myself, personally.
I don't want to speak for our entire generation.
Right, I can only speak for myself.
Maybe I'll speak for myself.
I can only speak for myself.
While they chafed at requests to find similarities in their work, the interviewees spoke quite eloquently about their common experiences with economic cycles, media technical changes, and institutional shifts which characterized their formative years in architecture school and entry into the academic workforce. One of the clearest historical experiences that marked those who were in graduate school in the 2000s was the 2008 crash and the Great Recession that followed. Here's Brittany Udding, Meredith Miller, Katie McDonald, Anna Niemark, Kyle Miller, John Lott, and Joffrey Kolb.
I think what's really critical about our generation is that we were in undergrad during the financial crisis. And so it was a moment in which, after we graduated, there was this kind of profound reckoning of the relationship between architecture and economic systems that support it.
One thing that you might also associate with that group of people, including ourselves, is the time that they entered academia was, you know, roughly in the kind of like 2008, 2009, 2010 post-economic crash. And looking back at that time, just how many people were losing their jobs and, you know, getting laid off from architecture practices and getting an academic job was such a great option to no longer rely on this completely unstable job market and to be able to teach and start doing work.
Whether you graduated in 2008, which I think people like Jennifer Bonner graduated around that time from the GSD, or whether you graduated, you know, 5 or 6 years later, I think you are still coming into architectural practice at a time when the profession was not stable, when it was struggling financially, and when firms were really trying to build themselves back up after collapse. And so that led to limited possibility of opportunities where from corporate practices to design leading practices, the employment opportunities were limited, often underpaid or exploitative. And so I think you have the thought of those two generations or half generations maybe shaped by that, you know, that economic reality. I think it leads certain people into teaching, actually, instead of practice in interesting ways. That as a kind of shift to have high-performing individuals who may have gone into practice but actually go into teaching quite early in their careers seems like something that might shape and bind this group.
Both my partner, Andrew Elwood, and I graduated from our professional program at the GSD in 2007. So coming into a independent practice and also coming into teaching so early in our careers was brought on by the economic downfall.
My graduating class, 2008, I would think of that as being right in the heart of the financial crisis. A lot of my peers use that as an alibi for why they decided to teach or try to start their own practice. I don't know that I buy that because I think a lot of them would have tried to do that anyways. Maybe a small percentage were encouraged to, or quote unquote, forced to not practice in a conventional way because there maybe was less opportunities. But I think the majority of people that claim that alibi, I suspect would have tried to teach and practice on their own in a more critical way anyways. I think the financial crisis had a lot to do with how we positioned ourselves and how we broke from the previous generation, as well as just having room to operate as individuals that wasn't tied to kind of waiting our turn on the coast.
We all entered the practice part of this adventure right before the crash, 2009, right at the height, I think, of the project of excess, I think, formal exuberance. And so to me, it offered us all alternative methods and approaches to the project of architecture.
I started graduate study in 2009. The crash had happened and I went to grad school, which was the safest time to go to grad school. And what that means, you know, Obama had just been elected. The crash had just happened. I felt like we were in a period of optimism following a nadir, right? So when something gets as bad as possible, you can only go up. It's not that the economy had immediately turned around, but it was that the worst seemed to be just behind us.
The global economic crisis was deeply felt by this generation. And as we heard, it played a major role in their career paths and attitude towards architecture. Specifically, this generation was uneasy about the relationship between wealth and architecture. In contrast with previous generations of architects who were eager to secure moneyed private clients, this group frequently discussed their aspirations to do work cheaply or in the public sector. Another theme we will encounter throughout this issue is the changing nature of the academy, particularly under new models of neoliberal managerialism, which have reduced job security, increased faculty precarity, compressed faculty wages, installed a culture of constant performance reviews, and ballooned tuition costs for students. This group is a generation of academic workers, and their perspective can in part be understood as a response to changing conditions of labor. Here are Curtis Roth and David Eskenazi.
One of the things that I would sort of identify as generational, and is oftentimes maybe the way that I look at aesthetic the kind of relationships between aesthetics and culture and the work we do, would be the material concerns of each of our generations. And I think that is actually one thing that's super unique. If you look at not everyone, but the kind of majority of that group of people that's in that list, or the majority of people in my generation, all came up out of school, frankly, with probably a lot of student loan debt, and went into teaching positions or fellowship positions as a way to pay off that loan debt, to try to do the work that they wanted to do, to make a living, and so on. And so I guess one of the things that I wonder a lot about is the degree to which that as an economic circumstance motivates a generationality, because it's not maybe something we talk a lot about, but I think it focuses certain kinds of work that is apt for fellowship work or for teaching work or something like that, that is maybe not so apt for a generation previously that I think sort of tried to make a living through different models, largely through, you know, maybe a practice.
What I notice is, let's say, the faculty that went to school when going to college cost not $50,000 a year, and the ones that did. And I think that's the biggest generational difference that I can see in architecture right now, is not just in the sense of how they think of what school is for and what our responsibilities are as students, but also in the sense of our responsibilities to a creative practice that may or may not need to be grounded in something that students can pay the bills with later.
We will conclude this episode by acknowledging the historical context of these conversations, namely COVID-19 and the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd, two phenomena which are likely to be looked back on with similar significance to the 2008 recession, as shared historical events which produced a generationally specific response. This group saw the discipline as rapidly adapting in response to these politicizing events, and felt they were being interviewed in the midst of a sea change. Here's Michael Young and McLean Clutter.
But I think we're in a really odd spot right now, and I feel this just in terms of how I would answer some of the questions you put forward, because I'm of two minds. I can go to almost a situation, a position in which I would be able to answer those questions pretty fluidly, 2019, early 2020. Then I have to think about the fact that it's now late 2021, and I don't think I can answer them the same way, yet I don't actually feel like I'm fully processed in the ways in which I would answer them differently. Because I think you're catching everyone in a moment where we have yet to fully flesh out the implications to the changes that we need to address, yet we know we need to address them. And so there's the ghosts of the ways in which we've been thinking through things, and then the kind of startling realization of the changes that we need to start to do.
I think that this is a generation of practices that are coming to a certain point during pandemic, racial reckoning, and, you know, imminent climatic disaster. I know amongst my own colleagues here at Michigan, and I think elsewhere as well, I think that we're all feeling that we are in the middle of the most epic paradigm shift in the discipline in decades. And I'm not sure where it's going, but I think we're all grappling with these things in our generation at this moment.
While this group was uncomfortable being identified as a generation, their shared historical experiences and pluralistic attitude towards architectural production have set them apart from prior cohorts of academic architects in the U.S. Despite the lack of singular debates or aesthetic styles, we will argue across this issue of attention that the act of bringing architects together as a cohort, this act of constructing a generation, is a valuable way to understand, learn from, and question what role architecture can play in the world today. We will turn in our next episode to the question of genealogy, where we will hear a number of other ways in which this generation understands their shared experiences, notably the experience of academic lineages, the geography of American academia, and the discourses surrounding the projective or post-critical turn which marked the early 2000s. You have been listening to Attention, the audio journal for architecture. Issue 8, Talking About My Generation. Interviews were conducted by Joseph Bedford between 2021 and 2022. The editing and production was by Tim Cox. Narration was written by Tim Cox and Joseph Bedford. Thanks to the Graham Foundation for Advanced Studies in the Fine Arts for their generous support. And thank you for listening.